Supreme Court of the United States, Crawford v. Marion County Election Board, April 28, 2008. Justice Stevens delivered the judgment of the court. At issue in these cases is the constitutionality of an Indiana statute requiring citizens voting in person on Election Day or casting a ballot in person at the office of the Circuit Court Clerk prior to Election Day to present photo identification issued by the government, referred to as either the Voter ID Law or SEA 483, the statute applies to in-person voting at both primary and general elections. The requirement does not apply to absentee ballots submitted by mail, and the statute contains an exception for persons living and voting in a state-licensed facility such as a nursing home. A voter who is indigent or has a religious objection to being photographed may cast a provisional ballot that will be counted only if she executes an appropriate affidavit before the circuit court clerk within 10 days following the election. A voter who has photo identification but is unable to present that identification on Election Day may file a provisional ballot that will be counted if she brings her photo identification to the circuit county clerk's office within 10 days. No photo identification is required in order to register to vote, and the state offers free photo identification to qualified voters able to establish their residence and identity. Promptly after the enactment of SEA 483 in 2005, the Indiana Democratic Party and the Marion County Democratic Central Committee, Democrats, filed suit in the Federal District Court for the Southern District of Indiana against the state officials responsible for its enforcement, seeking a judgment declaring the voter ID law invalid and enjoining its enforcement. A second suit seeking the same relief was brought on behalf of two elected officials and several nonprofit organizations representing groups of elderly, disabled, poor, and minority voters. The cases were consolidated, and the state of Indiana intervened to defend the validity of the statute. The complaints in the consolidated cases allege that the new law substantially burdens the right to vote in violation of the 14th Amendment, that it is neither necessary nor appropriate method of avoiding election fraud, and that it will arbitrarily disenfranchise qualified voters who do not possess the required identification and will place an unjustified burden on those who cannot readily obtain such identification. After discovery, District Judge Barker prepared a comprehensive 70-page opinion explaining her decision to grant defendants' motion for summary judgment. She found the petitioners had not introduced evidence of a single individual Indiana resident who will be unable to vote as a result of SEA 483, or who will have his or her right to vote unduly burdened by its requirements. She rejected as utterly incredible and unreliable the expert's report that up to 989,000 registered voters in Indiana did not possess either a driver's license or other acceptable photo identification. She estimated that as of 2005, when the statute was enacted, around 43,000 Indiana residents lacked a state-issued driver's license or identification card. A divided panel of the Court of Appeals affirmed. The majority first held that the Democrats had standing to bring a facial challenge to the constitutionality of SEA 483. Next, noting the absence of any plaintiffs who claimed that the law would deter them from voting, the Court of Appeals inferred that the motivation for the suit was simply that the law may require the Democratic Party and the other organizational plaintiffs to work harder to get every last one of their supporters to the polls. It rejected the argument that the law should be judged by the same strict standard applicable to a poll tax, because the burden on voters was offset by the benefit of reducing the risk of fraud. The dissenting judge, viewing the justification for the law as hollow, more precisely as a not too thinly veiled attempt to discourage Election Day turnout by certain folks believed to skew Democratic, would have applied a stricter standard, something he described as close to strict scrutiny light. In his view, the law imposes an undue burden on a recognizable segment of the potential eligible voters and therefore violates their rights under the First and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. Four judges voted to grant a petition for rehearing en banc. Because we agreed with their assessment of the importance of these cases, we granted certiorari. We are, however, persuaded that the District Court and the Court of Appeals correctly concluded that the evidence in the record is not sufficient to support a facial attack on the validity of the entire statute, and thus affirm. Part 1. In Harper versus Virginia Board of Elections, 1966, the court held that Virginia could not condition the right to vote in a state election on the payment of a poll tax of $1.50. We rejected the dissenters' argument that the interest in promoting civic responsibility by weeding out those voters who did not care enough about public affairs to pay a small sum for the privilege of voting provided a rational basis for the tax. Applying a stricter standard, we concluded that a state violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment whenever it makes the affluence of the voter or the payment of any fee an electoral standard. We used the term invidiously discriminate to describe the conduct prohibited under that standard, noting that we had previously held that while a state may obviously impose reasonable residence restrictions on the availability of the ballot, it may not deny the opportunity to vote to a bona fide resident merely because he is a member of the armed services. Although the state's justification for the tax was rational, it was invidious because it was irrelevant to the voter's qualifications. Thus, under the standard applied in Harper, even rational restrictions on the right to vote are invidious if they are unrelated to voter qualifications. In Anderson versus Celebrezze, in 1983, we confirmed the general rule that even-handed restrictions that protect the integrity and reliability of the electoral process itself are not invidious and satisfy the standard set forth in Harper. Rather than applying any litmus test that would neatly separate valid from invalid restrictions, we concluded that a court must identify and evaluate the interests put forth by the state as justifications for the burden imposed by its rule, and then make the hard judgment that our adversary system demands. In later election cases, we have followed Anderson's balancing approach. Thus, in Norman v. Reed in 1992, after identifying the burden Illinois imposed on a political party's access to the ballot, we called for the demonstration of a corresponding interest sufficiently weighty to justify the limitation, and concluded that the severe restriction was not justified by a narrowly drawn state interest of compelling importance. Later, in Burdick v. Takushi, 1992, we applied Anderson's standard for reasonable non-discriminatory restrictions and upheld Hawaii's prohibition on write-in voting, despite the fact that it prevented a significant number of voters from participating in Hawaii elections in a meaningful manner. We reaffirmed Anderson's requirement that a court evaluating a constitutional challenge to an election regulation weigh the asserted injury to the right to vote against the precise interests put forth by the state as justifications for the burden imposed by its rule. In neither Norman nor Burdick did we identify any litmus test for measuring the severity of a burden that a state law imposes on a political party, an individual voter, or a discrete class of voters. However slight that burden may appear, as Harper demonstrates, it must be justified by relevant and legitimate state interests sufficiently weighty to justify the limitation. We therefore begin our analysis of the constitutionality of Indiana's statute by focusing on those interests. Part 2. The state has identified several state interests that arguably justify the burdens that SEA 483 imposes on voters and potential voters. While petitioners argue that the statute was actually motivated by partisan concerns and dispute both the significance of the state's interests and the magnitude of any real threat to those interests, they do not question the legitimacy of the interests the state has identified. Each is unquestionably relevant to the state's interest in protecting the integrity and reliability of the electoral process. The first is the interest in deterring and detecting voter fraud. The state has a valid interest in participating in a nationwide effort to improve and modernize election procedures that have been criticized as antiquated and inefficient. The state also argues that it has a particular interest in preventing voter fraud in response to a problem that is in part the product of its own maladministration, namely that Indiana's voter registration rolls include a large number of names of persons who are either deceased or no longer live in Indiana. Finally, the state relies on its interest in safeguarding voter confidence. Each of these interests merits separate comment. Election modernization. Two recently enacted federal statutes have made it necessary for states to re-examine their election procedures. Both contain provisions consistent with the state's choice to use government-issued photo identification as a relevant source of information concerning a citizen's eligibility to vote. In the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, NVRA, Congress established procedures that would both increase the number of registered voters and protect the integrity of the electoral process. The statute requires state motor vehicle driver's license applications to serve as voter registration applications. While that requirement has increased the number of registered voters, the statute also contains a provision restricting states' ability to remove names from the lists of registered voters. These protections have been partly responsible for inflated lists of registered voters. For example, evidence credited by Judge Barker estimated that as of 2004, Indiana's voter rolls were inflated by as much as 41.4%, and data collected by the Election Assistance Committee in 2004 indicated that 19 of 92 Indiana counties had registration totals exceeding 100% of the 2004 voting age population. In HAVA, Congress required every state to create and maintain a computerized statewide list of all registered voters. HAVA also requires the states to verify voter information contained in a voter registration application and specifies either an applicant's driver license number or the last four digits of the applicant's Social Security number as acceptable verifications. If an individual has neither number, the state is required to assign the applicant a voter identification number. HAVA, HAVA, also imposes new identification requirements for individuals registering to vote for the first time who submit their applications by mail. If the voter is casting his ballot in person, he must present local election officials with written identification, which may be either a current and valid photo identification or another form of documentation such as a bank statement or paycheck. If the voter is voting by mail, he must include a copy of the identification with his ballot. The voter may also include a copy of the documentation with his application or provide his driver's license number or Social Security number for verification. Finally, in a provision entitled Fail-Safe Voting, HAVA authorizes the casting of provisional ballots by challenged voters. Of course, neither HAVA nor NVRA required Indiana to enact SEA 483, but they do indicate that Congress believes that photo identification is one effective method of establishing a voter's qualifications to vote, and that the integrity of elections is enhanced through improved technology. That conclusion is also supported by a report issued shortly after the enactment of SEA 483 by the Commission on Federal Election Reform, chaired by former President Jimmy Carter and former Secretary of State James A. Baker III, which is a part of the record in these cases. In the introduction to their discussion of voter identification, they made these pertinent comments. A good registration list will ensure that citizens are only registered in one place, but election officials still need to make sure that the person arriving at a polling site is the same one that is named on the registration list. In the old days and in small towns where everyone knows each other, voters did not need to identify themselves. But in the United States, where 40 million people move each year, and in urban areas where some people do not even know the people living in their own apartment building, let alone in their precinct, some form of identification is needed. There is no evidence of extensive fraud in U.S. elections or of multiple voting, but both occur and it could affect the outcome of a close election. The electoral system cannot inspire public confidence if no safeguards exist to deter or detect fraud or to confirm the identity of voters. Photo identification cards currently are needed to board a plane, enter federal buildings, and cash a check. Voting is equally important.